1859. That was the year that The Origin of Species was published by Charles Darwin. And the world certainly has not been the same since that time. As many of you know, his theory claims that all life came about by blind chance, by accident, and that life was not created by a supernatural being, and that through the years life has become more and more complex. But why has this theory become so popular, and why has it become accepted by so many people throughout the world? Well, probably the main reason, more than any, is that they believe it gives them a scientific reason for not believing in God. If there's no God, there's no moral law. And if there's no moral law, people can live any way they desire. But believers should not compromise, should not apologize, or hesitate in holding to their belief in a divine creator, because there is ample evidence that all life was created by a supernatural being. In Isaiah chapter 44, the prophet tells us in verses 24 and 25 the following. Isaiah 44, verses 24 and 25. Thus says the Lord, your Redeemer, and He who formed you from the womb, I am the Lord who makes all things, who stretches out the heavens all alone, who spreads abroad the earth by myself, who frustrates the signs of the babblers and drives diviners mad, who turns wise men backward and makes their knowledge foolishness. A great text talking about how people who believe in evolution are contradicted by God. Turning back a few pages to Isaiah 42, verse 5, the same prophet says, Thus says God the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread forth the earth and that which comes from it, who gives breath to the people on it and spirit to those who walk on it. Certainly some amazing words. Years ago, Isaac Newton had made a very intricate replica of the solar system. And it was sitting on a table in his laboratory. In the center of the device was a model of the sun, of course. And spinning around it on thin metal rods were eight small globes representing all the known planets at the time. The model was fitted with belts and pulleys so that the slightest touch would set the mechanism in motion. And it moved perfectly, just like the solar system. Well, one day a colleague who did not believe the Bible's account of creation stopped by his laboratory for a visit. When he spotted the model sitting there on a large table, he walked over for a closer look. He reached out and touched the metal rods, and like clockwork, the tiny planets began to move in well-oiled precision. Well, the visitor was delighted. He said, "What a magnificent machine. My dear Newton, you must tell me, who made this amazing contraption for you?" Well, Newton paused for a moment and then smiled and said, "Nobody." "What?" the visitor exclaimed, shaking his head in disbelief. "Nobody, you say? How can that be?" "Yes, that's right. The balls and belts and pulleys you see here came together entirely by accident. And by some unknown miracle, they move along in perfect orbit just as you see them now." Well, at that point, the skeptic realized that what Newton was saying. How foolish to think that a detailed model of the solar system could come together by accident. But how much more foolish to believe that the real solar system came together by chance. And what an excellent example that is. How foolish it is to believe that this world, as complex and complicated as it is, could come about solely and strictly by accident. I want to spend the rest of the time talking about how this belief in life coming about by accident, how this belief in evolution causes a culture to decline. This is a quote from Dr. William Craig. One rabbi who was imprisoned at Auschwitz said that it was as though all the Ten Commandments had been reversed. Thou shalt kill, thou shalt lie, thou shalt steal. Mankind has never seen such a hell. And yet, in a real sense, if naturalism is true, in other words, the theory of evolution, our world is Auschwitz. There is no good and evil, no right and wrong. Objective moral values do not exist. He's saying ideas have consequences. Beliefs have consequences. And since Darwinism began to be accepted in our society's institutions, the results have been disastrous. And you can see that moral decline by looking out into our culture and our society. Because that belief, Darwinism, naturalism, said that there's no room for God, there's no room for the Bible, there's no room for moral absolutes. There is none. It teaches that there's no ultimate meaning beyond our temporary physical existence. Ethics and morals, they're just illusions. They don't actually exist. If true, things like infanticide, euthanasia are perfectly acceptable. And people who believe that we are mere accidents, that we are here simply by chance, shouldn't have any problem believing that babies who are born with certain illnesses can be killed. Well, that shouldn't be a problem if those babies are just animals and they're nothing more than just an accident. Same way with euthanasia. If people reach a certain age and they're not of any benefit to society, well, if evolution is true, then there's nothing wrong with getting rid of them because they don't have any inherent value. So ideas have consequences. But believers know better than that. They know better. They know there are moral absolutes. We understand why there are moral absolutes. And those moral absolutes do not have origins in the natural world. They're based upon the character of God. That's why we have moral absolutes. It's because of who God is. In 1 Peter chapter 1, the Apostle Peter refers to this very thing. 1 Peter chapter 1, beginning in verse 14. Peter says this. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 14. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lust as in your ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it's written, be holy for I am holy. Why are people called to be holy, distinct, set apart? Because of who God is. That's why. That's why there are moral absolutes. It's because of God and his character. You remove God from the picture, from the equation, there are no moral absolutes. And so killing and murder, stealing, rape, all of these things would be perfectly acceptable. And you go back to the days of Hitler, you go back to the days of Stalin, you go back to the killing fields of Cambodia, you go back to all of those, and you see this belief inherent in the people who led those particular slaughters. They did not believe in the sanctity of life. So it was nothing to kill millions of people. There was nothing wrong with that. And without a belief in Jehovah God and his holiness, there are no moral absolutes. Ideas have consequences. The legacy of Darwinism lives on as seen in the decline of moral values. Listen to these words. This was in the New Oxford Review a few years ago. Benjamin Weicker says, we live in a time of complete moral revolution, when moral boundaries are being crossed so quickly that they fly past in a blur like so many telephone poles as we hurtle into the new millennium. If we flipped through newspapers during the last half century, we would see the divorce rate blossom, the introduction and widespread of legalized abortion, sexual hysteria, men marrying men, women marrying women, in vitro fertilization of a grandmother with the eggs of her daughter fertilized by her son-in-law, pedophiles clamoring for legal recognition, partial birth infanticide, the marketing of fresh baby parts from abortion clinics, and now a British panel recommending human cloning for cell research. And that's just a few things. But if you look at all of those come about by people ignoring God and His Word. Again, you take that away, you take away God and His character, who He is, and His Word from the equation, then all of those things are seen to be perfectly acceptable. There's nothing wrong with abortion if there's no God and there's no moral absolutes and life isn't sacred. There's nothing wrong with it. And that's what many people believe. And how sad, sad, sad that is. But Darwinism leads to those things. Leads to those things. When we believe that life ultimately was just a pure accident, just came by chance, and that there was no supernatural being who brought it into existence. If we believe that natural selection has led us to this point, if we believe those things, then no wonder we see those things we've just talked about in our world. Also, you'll see that Darwinism leads to hopelessness, as it must, because Darwinism leads to a belief that this life, when we die, is it. There's nothing after this life. This is a quote from Cornell University historian William Provine. "The implications of modern science, however, are clearly inconsistent with most religious traditions." There's no doubt about that. "No purposive principles exist in nature. Evolution has occurred by various combinations of random genetic drift, natural selection, heredity, and many other purposeless mechanisms." Notice the word purposeless. "Humans are complex organic machines that die completely with no survival of soul or psyche. Humans and other animals make choices frequently, but these are determined by the interaction of heredity and environment and are not the result of free will." This is something else that comes about from Darwinism, is that people have no free will. They're just machines that are programmed. Therefore, they are not responsible for their actions. "No inherent moral or ethical laws exist, nor are there absolute guiding principles for human society." Listen to this last statement. "The universe cares nothing for us, and we have no ultimate meaning in life." No wonder there's such a sense of hopelessness in people's lives. You know, if you have the basic belief that this life is all there is, that all life on earth arose by accident, by chance, if you believe there's no God, no supernatural creator, then life has no hope. You know, you live based on the belief that it's just all about me and I'm just going to do everything I can for myself while I live, because when it's over, it's over. Now, how unbelievably sad is that picture of life. But you look at people who believe in evolution, and you see people that believe in atheism, you see how, in their writings, how hopeless and sad they are. Well, ideas have consequences. It's not surprising. One of the most famous atheists of the past year is Robert Ingersoll. You read some of the last writings he wrote before his death. Some of the saddest, most pathetic writings imaginable. No hope whatsoever. Everything was darkness for him. Well, it is. Without God and without hope of an afterlife, life is hopeless without meaning. And Solomon, more than 2,000 years ago, stated that a life without God is meaningless. Solomon knew that. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, this is what Solomon writes about a life that's lived purely under the sun, a life without God, a life that's lived simply on the earth without thought of an afterlife. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 10, Solomon writes, Ecclesiastes 2, verse 10, "Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and all the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun." Life lived under the sun, life lived solely on earth for things of the world without God, had no profit. It was vanity. It was meaningless. It was empty. Solomon told us that several thousand years ago. You take God away, you take the Word away, life is completely meaningless without hope of any kind. At one time, Dr. Anthony Flew was one of the most well-known atheists in the world. I remember reading some of his material way back in the 70s. And for decades, he conducted many debates with believers. Believers all over the world. Some of the most famous beliefs or debates between believers and non-believers occurred between him and others. He had a very famous debate with Brother Thomas Warren, a wonderful gospel preacher that passed away a few years ago. So for decades, he was one of the most well-known atheists in the world. In the spring of 2004, he announced that he had become convinced by the evidence that God did exist and was the creator of life. Well, you can imagine the reaction in the atheistic world to that. That announcement completely stunned the world. I remember when it happened. It was just one of the most amazing things to ever come out. Here's one of the most dedicated, renowned atheists of all time stating, and he made a public statement about this, public announcement, that after looking at the evidence objectively and sincerely, there was no doubt that there was an intelligent being who created life. And a lot of that evidence he looked at was based on DNA. But he said there was simply no way that life came about by accident. Belief in a divine creator was more reasonable than belief in blind luck. In blind luck. In Acts chapter 17, and we'll close the lesson with this. In Acts chapter 17, this is Paul's famous lesson, sermon in Athens on Mars Hill. In Acts 17, he is talking to those people about the true God and that he exists. He describes the true God. In verse 24 of Acts 17, Paul writes, "God, who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. Nor is he worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. And he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for Him and find Him, though He is not far from each one of us." That's Jehovah God. Paul said, He is the one who made the world and everything in it. He's the one that's given us life and breath and all things. Yes, it is far more reasonable to believe in a divine creator than it is to believe that all of this has occurred in our world by blind luck, by simple accident. And it's beyond me why any Christian would ever, ever even consider believing in this atheistic theory. we serve the living God. He's not a dead God. He's a living God. He's the one that made the world. He's the one that created us. He's the one that gave us an eternal spirit that He has said will dwell forever somewhere. Every soul will dwell somewhere forever, either with God in heaven or with Satan in hell. Every soul, every spirit will dwell in one of those two places. And it all depends on what we do in this life as to where we end up spending eternity. As David leads us in this invitation song, if you need to respond to that great gospel invitation, we encourage you to do it as we stand and sing.